that in the next 5 to 10 years, this is the big sport.
Everybody, welcome to Real People Gaming Podcast. We have a special edition episode that we're bringing out. I believe April. It's April 22nd right now. We have a few awesome guests from collegiate esports, high school esports, and above. And I'm going to let them introduce themselves. Scott Zachman, you can start, and then we'll just go down the line.
Cool. Hi, everybody. My name is Scott Zachman. I am the competitive director for Rutgers Esports for the year of 2019. I have had a long past, or storied past, with Rutgers Esports over the years. I started in 2016, and I created the Overwatch Club. At the time, we had 14 members at Rutgers Esports, and all of those executive members were comprised of the different presidents from different games. And that's kind of how I got my little segue into the Rutgers esports side of things, and actually esports in general. I've played college lacrosse, and I've played lacrosse all my life. I'm very competitive, and I was looking to spice things up. So I tried esports, fell in love, and will be pursuing that for the rest of my life, hopefully.
It's a fun life to live.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yep. Good evening, everybody. This is Demetrius from Stockton University, and I've been a technology enthusiast since I was a little kid, and in fact, I've been gaming for quite some time now. So when the opportunity presented itself to get involved with Stockton Esports, I really looked forward to doing that, and it was amazing. So our program isn't quite as storied as Rutgers is. We launched the program about 4 months ago. And we competed this season for the first time, so we're still sort of launching the program, as it were. But it's been excited to be a part of that. We did actually pull out some pretty amazing stuff this semester, including what Anthony was referencing at HB GamerCon in March of 2019.
Okay.
So we wound up being the Fortnite champions for the event, which was pretty awesome. We took first place overall, and they named 2 season MVPs from Stockton, which was fantastic.
That's really amazing. Is that the first event that you guys entered in since you've started your organization, or what was your first event?
Sure. Okay. So Stockton competed competitively for the first time in spring of 2019 in the ECAC Esports Collegiate Tournament. And that ultimately culminated in our first LAN event, which was at the Hudson Valley GamerCon, or HVGC.
Mm-hmm.
And during that event, we competed in Fortnite, League of Legends, and Overwatch. We wound up winning the tournament for Fortnite, which was pretty amazing. I mean, we didn't expect it, obviously, going in. And we wound up making it to the finals for League of Legends, which was pretty awesome as well. And then the quarterfinals for Overwatch. So we wound up basically placing for each of the three titles, which was
amazing.
Unbelievable.
Anthony, how did you get into esports, and what are you working on now?
That is a good question. And I have been in video gaming for a long time, much longer than I will admit on this podcast. I have owned my own gaming studio. I started out at a company called Turbine, making a game called Asteroids Call 2.
Okay.
Which some of you may know, it's one of the first ever MMORPGs that was out there competing with EverQuest at the same time. After that, I worked on TV for a while, but my passion has always been video gaming. I've owned every console at home. I have a little museum of every console that's ever existed.
That's what I strive for.
I own... You have to strive for it, and you have to work for it, and you have to go to a lot of shops and a lot of
conventions.
Online, eBay, a lot of stuff that you want. Yeah, you just got to go to conventions and you go to flea markets and things like that. I'm pretty proud of my collection. Then, my company, we started the company in 2009, that was the first company to bring over free-to-play gaming into the United States. My company was based out of Seoul, Korea. We were initially funded by a company called Nexon, which created the free-to-play market years before that, microtransactions. And we brought it into the U.S., and you know, within a year and a half, we were purchased by Disney Interactive.
That's amazing.
I worked there making Star Wars, Marvel, mostly a game called Kingdom Hearts for 5 years.
Wow.
And I left there in 2016 and shortly thereafter started in-game esports here in the Atlantic City.
And with in-game esports, what's your mission statement? What do you guys do?
Our mission was multifaceted, right? So we have our initial setup was based around bringing esports to Southern New Jersey and New Jersey, specifically Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
So we are working with a group called the CRDA, which is the Casino Redevelopment Authority. And what they do is take a portion of casino revenues and reinvest it into the city of Atlantic City for worthwhile things.
That's nice.
Some of them are physical buildings. Some of them are tourist attractors, like esports. So we asked them and had a campaign for about 6 months to invest in esports. And thanks to their efforts, and specifically a person named, a great guy named Marshall Spivak, who works at the CRDA, he really believed in the effort and has done it basically done everything he can to get these things approved at the CRDA. And I thank him just as much as anybody could be thanked in order to make this work out for the region. So we are bringing several events to Atlantic City this year in 2019, and the first of them is going to be the Collegiate Star League event, April 27th and 28th, of which Stockton and Rutgers are playing, I think, the first official head-to-head match, as far as I know, 11 o'clock on Saturday.
That's your headline match, yeah?
I think so, yeah, but I mean, we also have other things besides that one, but that's the one I'm the most excited about.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also bringing, you know, over 100 athletes from around the country, collegiate athletes, to compete in six different games.
That's amazing.
And we also have open tournaments for locals. So if you're a high school student or a college student who wants to compete, as long as you're over the age of 13, you can play in Street Fighter V, Smash Brothers Ultimate, or in Apex Legends tournaments with a prize pool of $20,000.
And that's huge because they can go to local events and things like that, but this is actually a league. This is a way for them to get noticed by bigger names and maybe bigger organizations. So that's really nice that you make it accessible for everyone.
And yeah, I agree. And I thank you for that. But I also want to point out that there's other things happening there too.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, in fact, Scott Zachman and Rutgers are running some of those symposiums that we're doing in order to get players how to teach them how to organize their own esports games, I mean leagues, how to organize clubs, how to become a varsity player. I mean, Scott, you might want to talk about that, Scott Zach, and you might want to add a little bit about what you guys are talking about.
Oh, yeah. Collegiate community building. I'm going to keep it short and simple. There it is. That's it. You know, we have over 3,500 people active, whether it's alumni or just general members. On our Discord, on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. We don't really count Twitter just because we have like 3,000 followers, 2,000 something followers. And that obviously doesn't mean that they're involved in Rutgers Esports, but on our Discord server, I think we have, last time I checked, is over 1,500 people in there.
Awesome.
1,200 people, so.
Before we get into like the actual events, which I definitely want to hit, I want to talk about Ben really quickly, and then we'll go into everything that's kind of fun that we want to talk about. So Benjamin, you have the floor. Who are you? How'd you get into gaming? And what are you up to?
Hi, well, my name's Ben, obviously. And I've been playing video games since I was about 10 years old. I got my first console, and that really just, I got an Xbox 360, and that really just set off me just loving video games.
Huge.
Altogether. Yeah, huge. Eventually, I went on to playing with an Xbox One and realized I played some games that are more competitive, like Rainbow, when that came out. I was like, hey, well, I know some of my friends that play competitively on PC. So why don't I try to get PC? I got a PC and I've been playing in some tournaments and realized, wow, this is really fun. I really want to somehow share this with other people. So I had an advisor in my school, Ann Arbor Township High School, that came up to me and said, hey, you're really into esports, right? I'm like, yeah, I love it. He's like, well, do you mind helping us start up an esports club at our high school? And I was like, you have me at esports club. So we've been on a mission since around winter break, which is around December, mid-December. And finally, we created the first official esports club that's right now in its pilot stages. And we hope to get the kids that are in the esports club to succeed at the Starlight League this upcoming Saturday and Sunday.
It sounds like you have the right crew around you to do it.
Oh, definitely. They're amazing people.
One thing, actually, I want to bring up, I guess, and I talked about this a little bit earlier, and this is to everybody here. You know, I've been doing a lot of, like, I was on a podcast last week about campus community building, right? Because I was like, you know, I got to get a little bit learned up. I got to get learned.
Yeah.
And one of the things that, like, really stuck with me is this, like, not necessarily theory, but this idea of having a quote-unquote golden child, where you have this really great student that puts a lot of work and effort, and then either once they leave or are not, I mean, really once they leave, because they're not the type of person to get disinterested, they take, like, it's just very hard to fill those shoes with somebody, especially at the college level, because it's very hard to find somebody that can, like, kind of just take the reins and start running things the same way. And, like, one of the biggest things about community building, and one of the things that I realized is, like, for us, we had Adam Baugh, who was that golden child, and after, it was just the shoes were too big, and the few presents that we had after just kind of fumbled, and,
really?
You know, we got really lucky with Tommy, but Tommy's been great.
So. Tommy's been great?
Oh, yeah. I was skeptical. He's very quiet, but
that sometimes that's the best, though, because they aren't, their ego's not too high a lot of the times, and they can kind of let everybody shine in front of them, and that's kind of like what a leader should do anyway.
He compliments me very well, Jen, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. How so?
Ego. He has the
oh, because you have the ego. We're all here for a reason, right? You all have assembled together on the Real People Gaming podcast to talk about some cool projects that you're working on. So let's talk about the Collegiate Star League. Whoever wants to go first.
If you're a student 13 or over, high school, I guess theoretically middle school or college or even a trade school, as long as you qualify and have a student ID of some sort, you can play in one of these three tournaments. And like I mentioned before, the prize pool is $20,000. So it is something that, you know, if you win, you have to be very good to win all three. But if you win, it's worth your while. It's worth your while to try to win, but it's also worth your while to see how good you are comparing yourself to other people. Many people, I don't think, have ever really done that before. You know, so my son, Roman, competed in a Fortnite tournament in Atlantic City. It was a small tournament. It was in October. And they expected about 100 kids to show up. They had 400 kids show up.
What event was that?
This was the October event that was run by Ari Fox.
Gamecon? I ran that tournament.
There you go.
I was working for Microsoft at that time, and I ran that.
So they didn't expect many people to show up to that tournament. And it was incredible because I was there, and you know how long it took to run the whole thing.
Yeah.
And my son was really proud. He came in pretty good placement, but he'd never competed it before. So when you have the pressure of playing in a live event with people next to you, and the leaderboard's there showing you where you're placing, and then you get your second round, it's very different than playing at home, right?
Big time.
It's very different. It is, and the pressure's on. And you know what's funny about events? Kind of sidetracking this whole podcast, but okay. I had to tell the story. So it's interesting, the kind of the helicopter parents that show up to those events.
Oh, big time.
Oh my God, a 12-year-old kid, and he's like, he's just going in there to have some fun, do his best. And his mother's like, you practice long enough. You know how to do this. Don't be intimidated by those other players. You know what you know. You're going to do great, and make sure you try your hardest. I saw a lot of that when I coached soccer. You know, I coached U10 and U12 soccer. Okay. I didn't expect to see it at an e-sport event, you know.
Y'all really are the new soccer mom and soccer dad.
And we know, I know from personal experience how aggressive soccer moms and soccer dads can be.
Yeah.
I have had people texting me during a game as a coach, texting me, why is my son not playing the front line?
Wow.
You know, so I would imagine during a game, I would imagine that this is something that will translate over to video games. But hopefully parents know a little less about video games so they won't be able to send those kind of texts. But yeah, there's a lot of pressure in a live event. So if you've never competed before, or if you're really good and want to compete against other people in Apex Legends, Street Fighter V, and Smash Brothers Ultimate, this weekend is your opportunity to check it out and try your skills. Jim Whelan, Boardwalk Hall.
Are they those the only tournaments that are happening for the public?
No. The public tournaments, yes. The other tournaments are going to be Dota 2, you have League of Legends, you have Counter-Strike, the Stockton-Rutgers game is going to be Rocket League, and we also have, if I go through the list of all the games, Fortnite. So those are all the games that are being played there.
Okay.
And the college players are playing for $100,000 in scholarship money.
Which is amazing.
They have a pretty good goal for themselves also.
A.K.A. the scholarship money?
The scholarship money, the prestige. I mean, it is a televised event on 2 Twitch channels.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of casters there that I could go through that list also a little later on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this is the early days. I always compare this to baseball in the 1890s when, you know, if you watch that Ken Burns documentary, this is when people are starting to organize leagues and affiliations are starting to be created. But it is also when rivalries start. So one of the interesting things is that we are seeing two schools, Rutgers and Stockton, you know, compete against each other for maybe the first time.
Yeah.
And it's going to be very interesting to see the results of that. So, Demetrius and Scott Zachman, if you don't mind, what do you think of this? Is there any pressure, especially in Stockton, playing in front of a home crowd?
Well, that's a great question, Anthony. I think that the pressure is on. That being said, I believe this is the first time that Stockton is playing Rutgers head-to-head, and we're looking forward to it. We feel like our Rocket League team is pretty scrappy. They did quite well at the Scarlet Classic just last week, I believe it was. They defeated Lafayette and took first overall, so we're feeling they're pretty strong. They also they were in the CSL and ultimately made it to the quarterfinals in April of 2019. They wound up defeating quite a few schools along the way. I'm looking to see if I have that written down anywhere here. But yeah, I mean, I feel like Rocket League is a good game for us to play against Rutgers if we're going to pick one.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, as much as I love my Rocket League players, I love all of my players, you know, they all show dedication in different respects. You know, for us, it's not our strongest game, I'll say that, but, you know, it's kind of difficult to have teams that are consistently playing well, especially with such a large pool of people that go to Rutgers University and that can compete. You know, I would like to say that I give all of my teams the same amount of attention, but I definitely have clear favorites, and, you know, Rocket League has been fun to work with. You know, it's a fun game. We brought it to a middle school, not us necessarily, but we played against Fairhaven. We've scrimmaged them. We've helped them in the past, Fairhaven Middle School. And we're excited to just be playing. You know, I think at the end of the day, it's really just, for us, it's more of a show match, and we just want to show off what we have and what you guys have and kind of show a little bit of a little bit more rivalry than we have. A lot of our rivals are like RIT, NJIT, and those are very different than necessarily a friendly rivalry, which we would love to have. Well, most of our rivalries are very, I wouldn't say toxic, but they're very high intensity, like octane, like crazy business rivalries.
Whereas your rivalry with Stockton's a little bit more fun.
Yes, exactly. You know, I think it's good. You know, it's RIT is actually probably one that I would consider a little bit more fun also. You know, I'm good friends with their president. We like to like badmouth each other on Twitter all the time. It's always like a very fun and light badmouthing. But, you know, like against NJIT, they're a good team. Our best is definitely Overwatch. You know, we're going to Houston in early May, I believe 10th to the 12th. I'll be out in Houston, cheering our team on. And, you know, with NJIT, we've had a very storied rivalry, not always the healthiest, and it shows compared to teams like RIT and all that kind of stuff, but we don't have to get into that. So yeah, I'm excited. You know, I'm excited just to be there. You know, I think this is huge for New Jersey. You know, I think Atlantic City could definitely be a hub for esports. Having grown up in New Jersey, lived here, you know, I think it just fits a lot of bills except for transportation. That's the only thing I would hazard to say that needs a little bit more work. But other than that, you know, it fits very well into an East Coast hub for esports.
I believe that as well. I think that the high energy, high competitive feeling of Atlantic City definitely lends itself to esports, and it kind of like rivals the Atlantic City, or not the Atlantic City scene, the New York scene, or at least it will.
Yes, I think it really will. You know, I have a lot of friends at NYXL. They have a lot of events up in North Jersey, specifically Helix. I know, Jen, you've been there before. I'm sure a couple of you guys have also been there, but I really want to focus more on the middle section, just because I think, you know, you hit people all over New Jersey, but then you also hit Philly. You know, it's only an hour drive compared to others, and even New York. You know, you're probably going to see a bunch of New York people coming down also. I just think it fits very well into that scene, especially with all the casinos in the area. Hotels are not at a shortage, so yeah, I'm excited. Honestly, I think it's gonna be a good test to see how well Atlantic City holds up for a lot of this stuff, and a good gauge of, you know, what needs to happen moving forward to kind of fill out this space.
I think so too. I think this is a really cool and unique event. If you guys don't mind me asking, I know what's going to be at the Collegiate Star League event this weekend, but what's a little background on it? How did it start? What led up to this weekend?
The Collegiate Star League?
Yeah.
I'm not an expert on the Collegiate Star League, although I do know a few things that I can talk about.
Cool.
So the event was something that the Collegiate Star League was looking for a home for its 10th annual event. So this is the 10th version of the Collegiate Star League Grand Finals.
Okay.
And I know that we had worked with them to bring them to town, Neil Duffy and Wim Stocks, to bring them to town to take a look at Atlantic City and survey the scene and see if it was appropriate for them. Thankfully, we had the CRDA, the Marshall Spevek, and the local political scene come out and make the pitch that Atlantic City was somewhere that was really good, as Scott just said, a really good place to hold these kind of events. There's a history here of boxing events where the Atlantic City was famous at one point in the 80s and 90s for the biggest boxing event in the country, along with Las Vegas. And we also wanted to showcase Boardwalk Hall, which is the first convention center in the United States, built originally in the 1920s for the Miss America pageant. But it's a beautiful place, and it's never really seen something like esports. It has a lot of events of various different, there's a whole bunch of different things that happen at Boardwalk Hall. You know, you have arena football games, you have tractor pulls, you have rodeos, you have the Miss America Parade.
So there's something for everyone in Atlantic City.
And yeah, you have concerts too. Yeah. You have all these things there. And this is something new to Boardwalk Hall, esports. Mm-hmm. And it's been something that we're working with the CSL and Atlantic City and the Boardwalk Hall management to figure out exactly what is the best way to do this, being that it's the first time it's ever been held at Boardwalk Hall. So there's a lot of history to this event in and of itself, but it's the first Eastport event.
Yeah, not only is it a historical building, but it's also a historical moment for the building.
Right, and that's also the first rivalry game, I think, adds to that context.
Which is exciting.
It is.
If you guys don't mind, I want to talk a little bit more about the high school esports leagues that have been being created all over New Jersey. It's really starting to boom. I know we have Benjamin and Egg Harbor. Benjamin, you're in high school, correct?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about, I guess, how it got started and the actual culture in high school esports at the moment, if you guys don't mind me digging into this, because I think a lot of people are super curious, and whether you are in high school listening to this or college and you know someone in high school, or you just want to make the New Jersey scene better, or even a parent who wants to get their kid more involved in their passions. I think nobody talks about the high school scene as much, so I'd like to know a little bit more about it, and I'm sure everyone else would.
Well, yeah, right now I'm currently a senior at Egg Harbor Township High School, and I originally wanted to get esports into the school somehow, some way, earlier last year as a junior, but at the moment it wasn't too big, or there wasn't enough people to back it up at the school. So I couldn't really focus on it that year. And then midway through the year, this year, I was approached by Mr. Sweeter, like I said before, and he asked me, are you looking to start up a club? Because I hear that you're really into it. And I said, yeah. We eventually got the club started, and the kids that are currently in the club now, I can see that they feel pride in being part of some type of club or activity that they could be good at. It's almost like it's a sports club for them. The kids feel like, hey, I'm part of a team now, and we can compete as a team. They like to have that cooperation. And I just like to bring that to those people. The same way, like I said before, I love being part of groups. I played soccer when I was younger, so and that same team effort followed through the esports.
I think that's really great. So it takes people with a competitive nature, and maybe they don't want to play soccer or baseball or get a surgery when they're 18. Maybe they want to just sit down and play some video games and be competitive in their own way, and I think that's really cool.
And some people, that's how they make their living. Like, you can make your living off of playing soccer, playing baseball. You can be like Harper, where he just got a million-dollar deal. But other people that aren't athletic and they're great at esports, they can actually make a living out of it.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Jennifer, just real quick, I want to follow up on that. So it's a theme that seems to come up quite a bit, and that's accessibility and inclusion. And I feel like esports sort of provides a unique opportunity for folks to get involved and get competitive, even as Ben said, if they're not necessarily physically fit or whatever. So I think that the school definitely sees this as a nice opportunity for the students to be able to get together and compete, you know, without necessarily risking physical injury or, you know, putting aside some physical limitations that individuals might have.
100% agree. It's also a point of accessibility, too. If you're handicapped in any capacity and maybe you can't be more physical, it's such a good way, not only competitively and to make a living out of it, but video games in general really bring a lot of people together and give connections that you otherwise maybe can't get. Were we talking about earlier that we said we wanted to bring Demetrius in to talk more about? Scott brought it up.
Yeah, one of the things that I like talking about is kind of not necessarily just community, but creating a club.
Thank you. Yes.
It's very storied. So creating a club has been a very difficult, probably the hardest challenge that Rutgers Esports has faced. just because inherently, you know, when you don't have the same administrator or you don't have a very involved administrator at the collegiate level, at the university's like administrative level, you know, it's kind of hard because these are college kids that will not only be there for 4 years, but maybe they got into it a little bit later, or, you know, maybe there's just been people dropping in and out of the club itself, because at the same time as it is a very professional thing to do, I think it's more than a club, especially at Rutgers. It's definitely, I would consider it a club. Honestly, I'd consider it a business.
It's 100% a business. I agree.
Exactly. You know, to all of the people on my board, you know, I've been doing exercises internally where, you know, we've done a lot of LinkedIn networking. Just because, you know, we've dedicated a lot of us 3 or 4 years into this community that we've built and worked on. And, you know, we didn't start it. You know, 2014 was technically, I think, the first year. And it's funny because, you know, it's changed so much, right? It's where it used to be like two people. At one point, it was two people from League of Legends. They had a League of Legends club. They're like, how do we make this bigger? How do we make this involved with everybody? And I think at that point it was Adam Baugh, Alex and two other people, I think, where they were just like, let's get together, let's create a Rutgers Esports club and let's see where it goes. And starting from four people is one thing, but creating it into a 38-person organization has been very difficult, especially when people not only don't see eye to eye on a lot of these things, because, you know, somebody who's leading sponsorship 1 year might be a business major, and then the next year might be a, you know, a communications major. And both are definitely viable for that position, but they both have two different outlooks on how things are run, and changing that every year is very difficult, and it's not something that you can easily kind of implement, hey, just do this next year. You know, you don't really want to, I don't think. You know, I think all of the trials and tribulations that we've had have been just because there's no clear guidelines of what's expected of members of the board, not necessarily what they are or are not doing. It's just making sure that everybody's on the same page of what needs to happen and a goal to move forward. Back in 2016, when we really started growing, when I was there, you know, I started the first summit for Rutgers Esports, where all of the collegiate leaders for all these different programs, like Overwatch, League of Legends, we all sat in a crowded room, very small room. I still have pictures of this too. It's a very small room. There's 12 of us, I believe, or 14 of us again. I don't remember the exact number. And then a few aides, I guess, quotes aides, where they would be like I think my two that I or three actually. I had my treasurer in there for Rutgers Overwatch. I had my vice president, who is also the graphic designer, Jackie Chen, who's actually done most of our graphics that we still even use today, some of them. And then my quote-unquote secretary, who was just wanted to be involved and wanted to learn and wanted to see what was going on. And all of us were in this room, and that was Sebastian Romero. Excuse me, I should also give him his due diligence, because he ended up being the vice president for a year and is now our director of HR and will be graduating this year along with me. And a lot of great people sitting in this room. We were in here for 12 hours that day. You know, we had an hour lunch break and we sat down. I had created a one page thing, a list of notes. And that at the end of that 12 hours, you know, it was 16 pages. And we had gone through everything, right? Where we wanted to go, where we think we should move to, all of this kind of stuff. And then we did, on the very last part, is goals. 1 year out, 3 years out, 5 years out, and 10 years out. You know, where do we want to be in this time period? Where should the organization be? What is our legacy that we're leaving behind for people to pick up on? And I think the only thing we really didn't do, which we really should have done in hindsight, and what I would, I guess, suggest to anybody listening is, you know, put the effort into kind of making guidelines for the people that will be succeeding you for how they should succeed, right, in that position. And That kind of stuff just needs to happen. And for us, that has definitely been our hardest aspect, right? Is, you know, you have people coming in and out of this organization. They need to know what to do, like, immediately, you know, and it can't be, oh, well, we'll just talk about it next week. Because at next week, you know, you only have so many weeks until you're at the end of the semester or you're at the end of the year. And I think we've gotten much better with that. You know, we have a board of directors now who I'm not even involved in like any specific club. I'm not involved with Rutgers Overwatch or anything. I'm just Rutgers Esports, and I'm the director for just the competitive aspect. You know, we have 9 of those. We have social media, we have content, sponsorships, event. And underneath us, we probably have anywhere between like 2 to, I think I have 12 committee members that, you know, we rely on to get stuff done. And it's not, there's no set structure. Like I couldn't tell any of you guys how to run an organization just because, you know, it has to be fluid and it has to be natural. There's no really set structure. I mean, I'm sure there's a very basic one, but there's no exact science to how does this need to look now compared to next year and what does this exactly have to look like. And again, Stockton, I as much as I applaud you guys for having like the full administrative support, and obviously Demetrius, you're here and this is great, you know, for a bigger school it's much, much harder than a smaller school with less people. Just because fighting the bureaucracy behind all of it, right? Especially with Rutgers being involved in the Big Ten, you know, we couldn't go through athletics. They don't want us, right? They don't. We're minnows in an ocean to them. Because at least that's their output. I don't agree with it, but that's how they see us. Just because of the amount of money, the millions and millions of dollars that they've sunk into the football program. And trying to go through that was a lost cause. And just recently, this last year, we've kind of realized we have to turn our heads towards student services, and they've been really great. But even then, it's just layers and layers of bureaucracy of, you know, who's going to be in charge? Do we hire people? Do we pull from Rutgers Esports pool of the graduating class? Like all this other kind of stuff is for us has been the hardest challenge, I'd say. And it doesn't mean that nobody's at any of the administrative levels are disinterested. They're very interested, but they have bosses to answer to, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's not the safe bet, right? It's exactly. So new, and a lot of people don't understand it yet, even though that's getting better and it's getting more mainstream. But I can see those struggles.
Yeah. So I understand what you're saying about that, Scott. And really, Stockton's approach has been sort of, you know, very, very different, I guess you could say, because we have a lot of support from our president on this and our athletics department as well. And, you know, I'm already a director level employee as it is, and I'm sort of overseeing this. So I answer to the CIO who answers to the president. So pretty easy transition to communicate, you know, the needs and that kind of stuff. But that being said, we did sort of a few interesting, you know, steps when we launched our program. One of them was to actually allow the students to build the machines that we have in our esports lab. So we sort of got some interest through the computer science students. There's a lot of crossover, obviously, there. And we got the students together. We developed a build guide. We had the students come out and actually build the machines. And when we deployed them to the lab, they all worked, which was awesome. And, you know, we sort of convinced the administration that this was not only going to support the casual and competitive, you know, sort of objectives of esports, but this is also an academic exercise as well for the students involved in building and supporting the lab and all that. So that was sort of an interesting outcome associated with it.
Sure. And, you know, what's funny is even our OIT department doesn't want this. You know, we're in the works of creating a LAN center, and OIT is dragging their feet. And, you know,
what is OIT?
Just Office of Information Technology, just at the Rutgers administrators that oversee all of that. And
right,
it's
yeah,
funny,
I would
because,
be one of those.
Exactly, and for us, you know, we're like, oh, this is easy, you know, of course you want to be involved, but, you know, not only is it the bureaucracy that's holding us back there even, it's also the fact that, you know, you have, I think, gosh, what was it? It was 2015, I believe, where a Rutgers student pretty much brought down the entire Rutgers, like, intranet, which is, like, just the Rutgers, like...
Yeah. Exactly. You're talking about the DDoS attack.
Yes, the DDoS, yeah. And I don't like going to specifics just because it's been a while since I've taken my cybersecurity courses from, like, Syracuse. But, you know, this is the thing is, like, you know, I can see 100% where they're coming from because the way that you – we would need the amount of – I mean, even ports open just at, like, the game level is just kind of absurd. And, like, they'd have to create a whole new system just specifically for us. That they just don't want to do. You know, they hate it. They hate this idea. They're like,
right. We
don't want to be involved in that. And that's just one of those things of having this big, like, bureaucracy issue.
Well, I think that's one of the advantages from my perspective is that I'm interested in this and I do that kind of stuff for a living. So, like,
exactly.
I am the computer security administrator. So, you know, I sort of have an understanding of the ports and the services and, you know, the minutia associated with doing that. And, you know, to your point, we did roll out specific group policies for the esports lab and stuff like that. Like, you know, we did have to take into account those considerations and put the operational support behind it. That being said, it was all worth it, right? I mean,
exactly. Yeah. And for us, you know, it's hard to show that worth where, you know, yeah, we have teams like we were flown out to California in 2016. Overwatch was. To compete in front of, like, I think it was like 300 people in person, like in an actual arena, and then just to we won money, and then on Twitch alone, it was like I think there was like 30 to 60,000 people at a certain point watching us on Twitch, you know. And for me, it's I look at it from the money, you know, you kind of have to. And I look at it in this aspect of $3,000 covers 120-ish jerseys. For Rutgers Esports, that covers every single player, and that's $3,000. You know, the amount of money that they've put into other aspects of the university that have been fruitless or have made us not necessarily given us the prestige that we've wanted. Specifically, I'm talking athletics. I'm sure it's not a really uncommon thing to know is that the Rutgers football team is pretty bad. We are in the Big Ten. And, you know, it's kind of one of the issues that I find is, you know, they don't want to be involved because, you know, they're focusing on, athletics is focusing on football, and that's pretty much it. You know, even our other teams, as great as they are, like lacrosse is really freaking good, wrestling, two national champions, I think, if I remember correctly, over the winter. But you still hear the most about football, and it's so frustrating to me. You know, it's... Here's $3,000, less than the cost of like one semester at Rutgers University, would literally cover every single jersey for every single player at Rutgers University, and that right there is just free advertising to me. You know, that's these people, these players, they're gonna wear, right? They're wearing them out. They're wearing them to side events that they participate in. They're wearing them all the time, and that's just huge, right? And for me, that's just shooting fish in a barrel, right? That's $3,000 into jerseys for an entire year, you know.
To get out of the advertisement bomb.
And interested students that are going to be wanting to go to Rutgers University because of their esports program. And it's just frustrating to me, you know. And Ben, I'm sorry, I feel like I've cut you out of a lot of this discussion, but one of the things that I actually specifically wanted to ask you was, you know, here you are in charge of starting this program. What is your plan of attack, I guess? And what I think, I'm sure I could give you insight, and also I'm sure Demetrius could give you insight into kind of what you want to do or what you should do or maybe what you're interested in doing at Eck Harbor.
Benjamin?
Yeah.
Oh, we're curious as to what your struggles are and what your battle plan is for your esports organization within your school and yourself, probably.
Struggles. Mainly just trying to get other games that have per se guns, like say like Overwatch. We know that there's a lot of money in Overwatch, and we understand that it's not a violent game really at all,
because one, there is no blood. At one point, yes, in pre-alpha or maybe beta, they had blood, but it's the fact that we're trying to get other games that that the AD or whoever has to approve of the games, like we just have to get more games approved so there's more variety for kids to play other than League of Legends, Hearthstone, and Smash Bros.
Sure. One thing that I found with my work down in Fairhaven at the middle school is, you know, I think the biggest thing is just knowledge at that point. You know, it's because they're not aware of this. You might be very clear on, like, you know, hey, this is, like, again, the technical term for that is actually unrealistic FPS, first-person shooter. And you might be aware of that, but they might not have that same knowledge. You know, to them, it's a gun. This is, it shoots and it kills. You know, that's like that's what they have going in their mind.
Yeah.
You know, they are not looking at this at a larger scale of, you know, the gun plays a non-existent role, per se. You know, and it's kind of hard to I guess explain that, but I'll try. Where, you know, when you're playing the game, the last thing you're thinking about is what you're shooting. If you think about that at all, and at the end of the day, you know, you're not in your mind and in the mindset of players, you know, you're not shooting a person, you're not shooting a living being, you're capturing an objective, or you're working towards a common goal, to win a match. And, you know, it kind of, you can compare it a little bit to, like, I don't know, maybe let's say football or lacrosse. You know, when you look at it, you know, you're not thinking necessarily of the checks or injuring another player. And
you're looking about getting the ball in the back.
Exactly. You know, that's just it. And that's the kind of stuff that you have to equate it to. And you have to show your administrators, you know, this is what it needs to look like. And this is what we are focusing on. You know, this isn't some game that is focused on the actual gunplay. And, you know, there are definitely games like that. You're like, I think you're going to have a hard time, like CSGO or Rainbow Six even. You know, those are hard games to get by, and I don't think you'll see them for a while.
Yeah, what I really don't see our school, especially being a public school, playing any games like CSGO or Rainbow Six.
Yeah.
Would I love that? Yeah, it would be amazing. But realistically, no, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, and I think that's the other part of it is, you know, focus on, like, even League of Legends, you know, Fairhaven, they didn't get League of Legends brought in, and to me that just shows a lack of knowledge at the administrative level, and not in a bad way. You know, it's not like they're purposely ignorant, it's just they don't understand the concepts, and again, not in a bad way, it's just something that needs to be learned and taught, and that we all here know, but this is the thing, is you have to kind of conceptualize that and put it into writing or words or pictures or video or however you want to do that, to really show administrators and people that are not endemic to esports, like, what that kind of means and what that looks like. So that is my suggestion, is just kind of breaking it down at the conceptual level, what you're doing in the game, not necessarily, and what you're thinking, not necessarily what the game is about. And that, I'm sure, would probably help quite a bit.
Ben, what I suggest is also, my approach has been a little different. Back in my early days of my career, I did a lot of television. So I was a art director and creative director for a couple of shows that were CG-oriented, Reboot, War Planet, Beast Force Transformers, Beast Machines, Spider-Man. We did a lot of shows that had what we call cartoon violence. And those shows were extremely popular with middle schoolers and high schoolers. And they had a level of violence in them that did not have blood, did not have any overtly gory. No gore at all, right? It was just people shooting play guns, and there was lasers and these undefined bullets, and we've had Gatling guns, but they always fired something that wasn't a real bullet. And there were never any repercussions. The characters just stood up and did it again, right? So I think the approach that has worked for us, for in-game, when talking to schools, because we've been talking to a lot of schools, a lot of middle schools lately, is that it's no different than what you would see on Saturday mornings or on Netflix at this point, right?
I agree with that.
This is not Grand Theft Auto. This is not graphic depictions of blood. This is not overt violence for violence's sake. You know, there's no one screaming epithets or going against any racial or ethnic group. This is just shooting pretend weapons that are not and not supposed to be realistic, even though they might look realistic to some extent in Fortnite. The results are clearly not realistic. You know, people don't just disappear and turn into a ghost with their belongings falling out in real life. So
yeah.
What we're pushing for is the classification of cartoon violence, which has been a norm accepted in the American mainstream by just about everybody for the last 30 years.
Looney Tunes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at this, you know, Wile E. Coyote.
I was going to say Wile E. Coyote. That's a perfect example.
It's extremely violent from a certain point of view.
Oh yeah, we're even struggling with that at the collegiate level.
Really, I'm surprised.
So that's not really news to us, because we were sort of given the directive initially that, you know, it's T for teen, which precludes a lot of titles, including CS:GO. But now, you know, I think the tides might be changing to at least support games within the leagues that we play. So, for example, if we play in the ECAC. Will at least support all the games that league features, you know, sort of regardless of the rating. But it's also a slippery slope, because I think that schools in particular want to distance themselves from any sort of violence and, to the extent possible, indemnify themselves as well. You know, I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's a risk, right?
It's funny because my son can't play football. My wife won't let him because of violence. Right? Now, I don't have anything against football, because I love watching football, but when you look at what actual violence is, which is football, I mean, football is the game where you smash the other person, and what perceived violence is, it's a very different world. All of this is perception. So I think one of the things that we all have to work on together, and my company definitely wants to help lead this because of the background we have in entertainment, is to classify these things as cartoon violence and show examples of why it is cartoon violence.
That falls back on to educating people. If you just tell, if you show them that this is the intent, they might have a different point of view other than what they initially had.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, you know, it's hard. And again, this is a little bit of a side note, but I actually got into an argument over Twitter with somebody. NBA 2K, there was, I think it was 2 weeks ago. Jen, I don't know if you heard about this too, but the NBA 2K League, there was like a scuffle that kind of popped up after one of the games. And for me, you know, this now brings into what happens when it gets violent in the real world, right? And why is that happening, right? Because I don't think I've ever heard or seen at a LAN somebody who's maybe playing a fighting game or a shooting game get up and, like, physically assault somebody else or pull out a gun and shoot somebody. You know, there's obviously the Madden issue, but again, that harkens back to, you know, the games themselves, I don't think you can necessarily blame. I think, you know, it's really the emotions that run high and get hot off of a lot of this stuff.
It's a mental health issue.
There have been athletes that have, you know, their anger has taken control of them, and they have purposely hit another player.
Exactly. You know, and that's just it. Is I like to think of it in a way of, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's called esports. Right? Sports in the name. You know, and that's just it. Is for me, it's tensions always run high, and I think one of the things that esports has yet to unlock at any level, any singular level, is that there's a piece of emotional intensity that needs to be either brought or toned down a little bit. And I think it's funny is that, you know, part of the reason why people not endemic to esports that have no idea what's going on, that are not involved whatsoever, think esports is like silly or boring, is because they're just looking at it as here are 12 people or 10 people sitting in front of TV screens, pretty much in front of monitors, like just not moving, not doing anything. And I think that's one of the interesting pieces is going forward is, you know, and again, a hot take, not necessarily when I speak for myself, not Rutgers Esports, but one of the things that I kind of took away, and whether good or not, it really isn't that great, but one of the best things that could have happened for the NBA 2K League, which again, small viewership numbers, a lot of this other stuff is, you know, there was not the violence aspect, but the emotional aspect. You know, here's something that we can now equate to sports where it's, holy crap, these two people are going back and forth at it, going together, and you can get this emotional register on these people, and you can feel the intensity. And that's not shown in a lot of games. You know, you're not doing that. Like, maybe, yeah, you're cheering for like a split second or like high-fiving a teammate, but the emotional intensity is not necessarily there as it is in other sports. You know, when you get a touchdown in football, everybody's freaking out, right? Literally everybody on the sidelines, everybody's going crazy. But you'll see a lot of lands. Like, you won't know when a team wins because they'll just get up and move, you know, and that's it. And I think, again, a hot take, just my opinion on my own, and something that I've been combated about a lot is, you know, that emotional intensity shown at the NBA 2K League was probably the best thing that happened for it. You know, the next day I had coworkers asking me, again, not involved in esports, and they've never done this before, is, you know, what happened with this NBA 2K League? Like, what was the deal? What is this game? All this other kind of stuff. And it showed interest. And inherently, I think people are interested in that kind of stuff. You know, not necessarily just the violence, but the emotional intensity that players bring and can bring.
They're just not exposed to it as much.
And again, can I comment on that as well?
Yeah, please.
Sure. Yeah, please.
Yeah, so I want to say that, you know, following HB GamerCon and specifically the Fortnite win, there was so much excitement and enthusiasm among members of the campus community.
Sure.
You know, everybody, there was a giant outpouring for, you know, what had happened and how it happened and who was involved and all these things, you know, people wanted to know. And, you know, as they were following the streams and as they were hearing the commentary, there was an energy there that, you know, people didn't realize that they would feel for Fortnite. I mean, a lot of these people are parents.
Sure.
You know, of kids that are playing Fortnite now, and they're seeing the school begin to compete in this, and to them it's sort of amazing and miraculous as well, you know. So for us, we sort of had this Cinderella story in the first semester of launch. We'll see if we can keep it up, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I see esports as an amazing way to sort of be inclusive and also foster this competitive sort of, you know, environment. And, you know, to my friend Ben on the line here, I think that we're going to be working with local high schools and stuff in the near future, you know, and specifically including EHT because they're local, right? I mean, they're right in our backyard here. So, you know, I would say keep doing what you're doing, Ben, and, you know, we look forward to the future.
Yeah, I hope esports in general. I know in 24 states it is sanctioned as a varsity sport, but I hope in the next couple of years, I hope that all of the United States has sanctioned esports as an official varsity sport for high school and college levels.
Me too, Ben.
Me too, and I really think all three of you are truly paving the way for other schools to do this, even middle schools. I think that the more success collegiate and high school leagues have, just the more schools are going to start participating and growing and really latching on and understanding the culture. I think it's going to be top three sports within the next 5 years. It's going to be like basketball, esports, and then, or maybe basketball, football, esports. It's my prediction.
You know, one of the things that we've been doing at NEA and Esports, which is probably mirrored by what Stockton is doing locally in Echo Township, is just getting the word out to parents that this is something that's coming and should be on their radar. I've been recently speaking to schools in the area, and I live in Linwood, New Jersey, So we've been speaking to school boards, we've been speaking to educators, principals, superintendents, and one of the things that has come up is the objections that some parents have to additional screen time for their kids, right? So there is this, obviously people use their iPhones and play video games on their computers a lot more than they used to be, mostly because they didn't exist when most of the parents were that same age. But there is a valid objection to having kids on screens all the time. So one of our, one of the things that we are trying to do is get the word out to local middle schools and high schools that this is something that should be on their radar. What we are telling them is that there are already objections from some parents to having another activity that brings additional screen time to their kid. We posted on a local Southern New Jersey Facebook post, an audience of about 1,600 people, that this is something we're bringing to the school system. What do you think about it? And for the most part, everyone was pretty excited about it. It was a way for non-traditional athletes, you know, if you're not physically built to be a sporter, an athlete, this is a great way for you to catch up. This is a great way for you to represent the school. This is a great way for people with disabilities to play a sport that normally they would not be able to. This is a great way for other people that are not those traditional types to be the school hero. And that went over very well and fine, but it was the screen time that was the single largest objection. People just did not want their kids on screens anymore. So what we said in response to that was, if they're going to be on these screens anyway, right, isn't it better to organize them into social groups where the goal is to play as a team, where the goal is to foster communication, where the goal is cooperation and teammanship, right? This is something that they're going to do anyway, and unless they're completely prohibited from doing it at home, which is really not our concern or our, it's really not something that we can have any say over, but if they're going to play games, it is better for them to play games in this social format that also brings the benefits of being the school hero. And that seems to have gone over well with most of the people who object. The remaining piece that we worked in was working with the American Heart Association to create programs where for every day that you spend playing games, there is a physical regimen attached to it that we are designing with the American Heart Association.
So what I've done actually, because I'm not playing sports right now, every death that I would have in one of my ranked games, I would do 10 push-ups, 10 sit-ups, just so I could stay active. So I think that's the ultimate.
Very smart. That is very impressive. It's a smart thing to do, and I think, you know, I would like to implement that, honestly. I'm going to do that next year. We're going to have our competitive team. Well, because one of the things that we do also, and one of the things that, Ben, you might want to look into is, you know, how do you keep your club members active and involved outside of video games? You know, and yeah, and for us, you know, that's, yes, Discord is definitely one of those ways, but also, you know, they'll create their own micro groups, right? Which is, we have groups that are doing things like going to the gym or going swimming or playing basketball, staying active and fit. And people that normally wouldn't do that because they feel uncomfortable going by themselves, you know, they found this micro community inside of the Rutgers Esports group to do that. And, you know, it's something that you can foster, right? It's not just some miracle that all of a sudden just happens, but like we have a group therapy channel. Right, it's just where everybody kind of just writes out what they're stressed about and like just gets it out of them, you know, and stuff like that is just super helpful because it's very stressful. At the end of the day, you know, when you're in charge of something this big and this unknown, it's hard. People's tensions run high, and you just need to get stuff out. So,
yeah, and to follow up on that, I think that, you know, it's sort of a stressful point in people's life in general, and esports is an excellent outlet for that stress. That being said, you know, I feel like what you're saying, our kids are doing yoga, for example. That's something that I didn't expect our League of Legends team to really be into, but it's something that they're talking about now. So I do see that there is a camaraderie that goes beyond the game, as it were. and it's great to see that. Yeah, I was really, I was just following up on Scott's point about the camaraderie outside of the game, as it were. And one of the things that I find so interesting is that the groups, the way the students group up, it's all based on game, right? I mean, so you'll have kids from all walks of life, and they come together based on whatever game it is they're interested in, which I sort of find fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's funny because, you know, you give them the tools and they'll just make the groups themselves, you know. At the end of the day, they'll figure it out, even if you're not specific about it. You know, that's one of the things that I found is just people enjoy other people and hanging out in person, you know. And that's why our LANs are such a great success, is because, you know, we capitalize on the fact that regardless if there's even internet or not, because we've had events where, like, the internet just goes out and we can't get it fixed, and it ends up being just people hanging out, you know?
They just want to be there around people that they like and exactly. With the same interests as them.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
What I have found in the many years that I've been playing games is I've seen this industry grow from a personal hobby, from something that I knew a couple of guys at school that did, to college when we started playing LAN games, playing Doom and Quake when they first came out, you know, where we would have 7-8 guys in a room and wonder what happened to the clock, because 7 o'clock in the morning showed up way too soon, to playing with my kids as they started getting into gaming at first using, you know, Nintendo Wii, and now they're on PC playing games as they're 12 years old. I've seen this industry grow from nothing into everything. And when I mean everything, the culture itself. And even if I had not been in the esports industry, which is where my passion is, video games, I'm just so damn proud and happy to see this become the thing that everybody does. You know, it's hard for you guys to understand it because I'm a little older than you guys. It's incredible. I don't think we also appreciate that in the next 5 to 10 years, this is the big sport. It's not football, it's not soccer. My kids can only name one football player, and that's Carson Wentz, because they won the Super Bowl. Right? They couldn't name any other sports player at all, but they know at least 10 streamers, you know, and they are not alone. All their friends are exactly the same at the middle school. This is something that we are all part of history. Years from now, whoever replaces Ken Burns making documentaries will make a documentary one day about esports, and all of you will be able to say, I remember that time, I was a big part of that. And that's what makes me so proud to be even on a podcast like yours, Jennifer, which I'm again, thank you very much for putting this together for all of us involved.
Thank you for coming on.
You know, in the past, it would be a radio show. And in fact, we did a radio show today, WOND Radio. But this is a media format that's, in my opinion, better than radio. This is something that lives on, that people can look at the archives and say, oh, that's a topic I want to listen to. I'm going to play that show, even if it was a year ago.
Or 10 years ago.
Or 10 years ago, right, as long as the podcast history goes. So this is something that's real, that's in the now, and all of us are part of shaping it. So I thank all of you for being a part of this, and I could not be prouder of the people that I've met doing this thing, including the people at Rutgers, the people at Stockton, and guys like Ben, who had so much enthusiasm, even though their school hasn't officially started anything, at Echo Township High School. My old alma mater, by the way. I'm very proud to be part of this. Very proud.
That was the best way I could think of closing that out.
I agree.
That was amazing. Well said. Thank you, Anthony.
Oh, thank you. I'm just saying what's already out there. I mean, it's
just the truth.
5 years from now, I think we'll be amazed at how much growth there is.
I 100% agree.
We do all these pitches all the time, and we try to tell people, these are the facts. This is what the attendance was in Katowice, Poland. This is what the attendance was and this event in Chicago. This is what they're doing in Arlington. This is what they're doing in Las Vegas. This is what they're doing in D.C. And those things go a little ways to convince people. But when someone sees a Goldman Sachs report on esports, like they did recently, that really goes over well with people over the age of, like, 45, right? we try to do what we can to explain something, but sometimes they need to hear from people that they trust who are not us. We try to explain the numbers and show them graphs, even if they're completely provable, but sometimes that's not enough. So what we're doing is what, even this radio podcast, well, this podcast, we're going to blast this out to people. Listen to this. This is the authenticity of this thing. These are like Stockton. Stockton Esports was organized by mostly students because of student demand. We want this. You know, we've spoken to high schools in the last 2 weeks, including locally here at the Mainland High School in Linwood. They are demanding that someone put together an esports team. And the administration is listening. So, as far as I know, and I'm not a historical expert by any means, I don't know how many other sports were germinated by such high student demand. So this has to happen. And that's something that I think is different from other sports, right? So football, basketball, baseball, those things are, well, just kind of expected. And the faculty expects that because that's what they did when they grew up. I mean, those sports have been around for dozens and dozens and dozens, if not 100 years. Esports is the first one that was the other way around. The students are demanding this thing. And the faculty, even though they're a little slow to start, they're now listening. And at least locally, once one school does it, the other school has to do it because that school's doing it. And where that whole fear of missing out takes over in the administration. And there's a certain amount of publicity that you get from being associated with this thing. And all the schools can benefit from that. So I urge people, players, parents, to come out this weekend to Jim Whelan Boardwalk Hall, sponsored by the CRDA, the Collegiate Star League event, Grand Finals. You can play if you're a student age 13 and up, as long as you have ID of some kind. You can play for $20,000 prize pool, but you can also watch what are going to become pros very soon, these collegiate pros. They're going to become professional esports players. Watch how they play. Attend Rutgers seminars and learn how to create your own club. Just go from the sidelines into the front lines and be part of this thing, because your impact now will be much larger than it will be in 5 years, and it's going to be much larger than it could have been 5 years ago. So we hope to see you this weekend in Atlantic City.
Now they have to be there.
They need to be there.
Yep.
And tickets are available. Yeah, tickets are available to Ticketmaster, or go to the Collegiate Star League website. You can just Google Collegiate Star League Grand Finals, and you'll find ways to get tickets.
Surely.
All right.